Hitler made a quick trip to France. He saw himself as an artist, as a young man in Vienna who had tried to carve out a career for himself as an artist. He wanted to visit the sites of Paris, the great city of art, visited the Eiffel Tower, visited the tomb of Napoleon. One wonders what he thought as he looked down at this enormous marble sarcophagus of the great Napoleon. And most important, Hitler would attend the signing of the armistice with the French high command. He startled the French by insisting that the armistice be signed in the woods at Compiègne, and that the very railroad car in which the Germans had signed the armistice in November of 1918 be brought to the spot and the armistice signed in that railroad car. This victory over France, this miraculous victory over France, would send Hitler's domestic popularity skyrocketing, and in the early summer of 1940, Hitler looked as if he had become the master of the European continent. Britain was holding out. Britain now stood alone, but it seemed fairly obvious to all observers that Britain was doomed, that Britain was, as the French high command anticipated, certain to fall. The British expeditionary forces had barely escaped complete disaster at Dunkirk earlier on in the campaign. The British had been able to extract 200,000 of their troops, as well as about 100,000 French soldiers, literally off of the beaches of Dunkirk in a miraculous escape from the continent as the German forces bore down upon them, pinned them between against the sea. But the miracle of Dunkirk, as Churchill would refer to it, was hardly a victory for Britain. The British had averted disaster, but had escaped back across the channel, leaving all of their heavy equipment, their tanks, their artillery, and so on the continent. Churchill looked to the United States for aid, but realized that any support was going to be indirect and was going to take a great deal of time. Roosevelt would initiate Lend-Lease, to a program to provide Great Britain with support. But Roosevelt was certainly in no position to maneuver the United States into this European war, even at the risk of seeing that Great Britain fall. The Germans, in the midsummer of 1940, began their own plans for a cross-channel invasion of Britain, codenamed Operation Sea Lion. I think it's indicative of Hitler's lack of planning, his unwillingness to realize that he was going to have to continue the war against Great Britain. There had been no long plans made for an invasion of Britain. Over the course of the winter of 1939-40, the German high command had had months to plan the invasion of the Low Countries and of France. But there the planning stopped. There was no additional plan for a cross-channel invasion, which would have to be an amphibious operation, quite obviously. Operation Sea Lion was an improvisation. The high command of the army given only several weeks to plan what would have to be an extraordinarily complicated invasion. It would require massing troops on the French coast or the Belgian coast. It would require naval transport across the channel. It would require air superiority over both the channel and the invasion beaches in southern England for success. An extraordinarily complicated sort of military operation, as the Allies themselves would discover several years later in planning for the D-Day invasion of Normandy, an operation which took months and months of very meticulous and careful planning. There was never supposed to be an invasion of Britain. Britain should have drawn the proper conclusions, Hitler believed. The key prerequisite for an amphibious landing in Britain was air superiority over the channel and the landing beaches. Before any invasion could be launched, the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe, headed by Hermann Göring, had to achieve this air superiority. Göring eagerly anticipated this mission. He was given the task, and the Germans began their air assaults on British targets in August of 1940.